C2PR, number 17B.
You know, in earlier times, I used a symbol that lately I never used again. So it's a very good symbol. I was teaching, saying, you take what you know, what is true and right, even if it's just a little bit, and you have to put it into the incubator. We can't say, I want the child, the next time that child must be here, and I can't wait until it's here. The law of nature says you jolly well have to wait nine months. But in those 9 months, the most important thing happens. Namely, that idea gathers identity. And you have to give it time, really, to go along the order. And it always unfolds the same way. Each child unfolds the same way. And so, with the with spiritual ideas, we should take them, those ideas which we admire, where we stand in awe before them, and take them in and put them into a kind of incubator where we give it peace and rest to unfold the way it wants to unfold, and not the way we want it to unfold. We, so to say, press it to unfold, force it to unfold, in the way we like it. A spiritual idea is the same as with a baby. It has its own order. The birth begins with moment, but it goes on with weeks and with months and with years. And it takes eternity to unfold properly. So we can't force it. We cannot take heaven in storm, I think you say, huh? By storm. Oh, yeah, that's better. Take heaven by storm. It just doesn't work. And therefore, that what one can see in the students often, that unrest, which says, I haven't grasped it yet. I haven't got it yet. Where can I get it? If I read this book, if I go to this lecture, if I go to that class, if I go to this, I might get it quicker. See, that's not the right, it's not the right method. We think it is the right method because the world does it that way. If I study biology or anything like that, or astrophysics, well, then I go to this lecture, that lecture, and this lecture, and he has something to say, he has found out something, and the other one has a new theory, and I get interested in it. But the spiritual, you see, is our true nature. It's not something outside. It's our true nature. And that true nature has to unfold. And prayer helps it to unfold. If we don't know those laws in prayer, then naturally our thoughts get scattered. Our love gets scattered. Our heart adheres to all sorts of things and gets scattered. And we should not scatter the fire if we really want to hit the mark. No? It's a funny thing. Right from the beginning, right from the 1940s, I could see that most of the Dolly students were making that mistake. I taught it right from the beginning. I said, don't scatter your fire. And I could see that they scattered their fire. They could not stay with those wonderful textbooks or with those wonderful talks of John Dolly and just sit down and ponder the way he has laid out those Bible talks, you know, those Bible books, and just stay with it quietly and say, what does that story say? What does it say in our language? What does it say in my life? How is that order? What is necessary? Just stay with it, you know, ponder it, and not get sidetracked with all the other things. And then it unfolds. And this is what we see here, brought out in a different way, that she would say in the text, you see, I always go back to mind. And that mind must be supported by spirit. And that spirit must be kept firmly and strictly, and you don't give in, and you have to go that way, and you resist the temptations. Then we come to the fourth, then this becomes your principled attitude. And once it has become the principled attitude, the fifth prayer would show that begins to have an effect on you. So, what is our epitome here? Principle as spirit. By allowing no discrepancy, see, discrepancy is a counterfeit of spirit, between outer and inner purity. Can you see principle as spirit? Huh? Conformity, unity, principle of inner and outer purity. Then we go on to soul, and we just feel, I wonder if she has anything else to say, or if she changes the subject. And she says, we should examine ourselves. Interesting. We should examine ourselves. What is that category? What is the tone? To see what we are, to define what we are. So, the question, can we identify ourselves rightly? So we should examine ourselves and learn what is the... It's interesting. Can you see? You come to principle as soul, which says, are you a hypocrite or are you not a hypocrite? How can you find out? You jolly well have to analyze yourself and examine yourself to find out the true, to find out what is there. Is it a true identity or is it a falsification? How can we find out that identity? He says, oh yes, you can easily find out. You only have to ask mind, spirit, soul. You have only to learn, mind, what? What is the affection and purpose of the heart, spirit? Was that the second prayer? Huh? So you have only to go back to learn, to go to the desire and find out what was it. What is, do you have enough of the second prayer, the affection and purpose of the heart. For in this way only can we learn, again learn, mind, huh? Can we learn what we honestly are. So, to identify what we are. Golly, think of it. Think of it that we can ask, who are we? And say, well, who are we? Well, I'm Max. Well, what? That's no divine quality. So, what are you really? Are you really the desire that wants to seek and learn what God is? Mind? And is it within you that affection in the heart that really loves the spiritual and loves with all your mind and heart the spiritual? Yes? Are you that? And then you know so what you are. So we are defined here in a wonderful way. Do we have those qualities of the prayer of mind and the prayer of spirit? Then we are really something. Then we have found our true identity. If a friend informs us of a fault, do we listen patiently to the rebuke? So, huh? Now, who are you? Are you the one who listens to the rebuke? Are you the one who really wants to be sinless? Or not? Again, I see what I am. If I don't like it that I'm rebuked, rightly rebuked, then I show forth that I'm not really honest, that I'm a hypocrite. And credit what is said. Do we not rather give thanks that we are not as the other men? Can you see we are? We identify ourselves wrongly. It's that examination. What are we? Or are we happy not to be like the other men? During many years, the author has been most grateful for merited rebuke. So, are we honest and take in merited rebuke? Sinlessness? Wrong lies in unmerited censure, in false rebuke, in the falsehood which does no one any good. That's the tone of soul. So, again, we can ask, what makes an honest prayer at the point of soul? Honest prayer is defined, do you honestly know who you are? Or do you try to be a hypocrite by covering things, by covering mind, spirit, and soul? If we are standing for the prayer of mind, of learning and seeking and searching what God is, if we are standing for the prayer of spirit, by putting what she said, our affection of the heart and purpose in the heart into that, and if we are third soul, willing to be open to rebuke and consider right rebuke, that is showing forth that you really want to have cleaned up everything within you so that you are sinless. If that is within you, that's an honest prayer. You have found yourself. You have examined yourself. We captioned it by saying on the soul, we always have to repeat the question above, how is a principle-like attitude established? Answer, as soul, by examining ourselves honestly, so that we don't fool ourselves. So we can't fool God, but we shouldn't fool ourselves either. So at the point of soul, of identity, where we honestly want to know who we are, we have to be careful not to fool ourselves. Do you see that tone easily? Yeah, you have to see it. We go on to principle. It's just one paragraph again. It says, the test of all prayer. The moment I read the test of all prayer, something rings in my ear and says, well, now comes the testing, the proofing. That's principle. Huh? Yes? I think slowly you get into the rhythm. Huh? It speaks to us. But be patient. I take 3 years for it, at least. Yeah? I want to do the same thing with the first four chapters. It cannot be learned otherwise than through exercise, exercise, exercise. No? No master, we say, no master falls down from heaven. Do you have a saying like that? No? Just meaning that the master is not made in a day, huh? Or in a second. It means that in order to become a master, you have to work for it. Just in music, in every subject. How can you be a master in any subject? It needs experience, it needs trying, it needs It needs error sometimes, the wrong step sometimes. All that is needed. We learn by error. We learn by mistakes. Then we learn by repetition. Then we learn by doing it all over again. And so it's really that exercising. Must be an exercise ground where the armies are trained. And yes, that's what we need, you see. Exercising the same thing over and over and over and over, until it becomes reflex action, reflex consciousness. Okay, so again, the test of all prayer lies in the answer to these questions. It brings forth a few questions. Do we love our neighbor better because of this asking? Again, you begin to hear again that you start with asking. You start with prayer, with mind. Asking, petitioning, desiring. The second is, do you love your neighbors better? Gives the sense of the spirit prayer. By this asking. Do we pursue the old selfishness? The third prayer, selfishness, that's sinful. Satisfied with having prayed for something better, though we give no evidence of this sincerity. See, there is no conformity, no evidence of it. Prayer and the test of it do not correspond, are not conform. We have principle, We are in principle as principle. Give no evidence of the sincerity of our requests by living consistently. That's principle. With our prayer. If selfishness, she takes up again the point of selfishness, if selfishness has given place to kindness, we shall regard our neighbor unselfishly, now comes the positive sense of it, and bless them that curse us. But we shall never meet this great duty, principle. It's a prayer of principle, as principle, that there is a duty, that there the duty of obedience, really, simply by asking that it may be done. And then here, an interesting point is, I think for the first time, she looks to the next paragraph, already in the preceding. Namely, she says, there is a cross to be taken up before we can enjoy the fruition of our hope and faith. What is that tone? Life? Yes? See, there is a cross to be taken up before we can reach the fruition, before we can reach truth, the demonstration of it, of our hope and faith. So, you will see that this is what she naturally does very often, that in a tone, she will end up the tone already with proposing what must come. Here she is proposing there must be a cross to be taken up, which is already life. And when we come to the tone of principle as life, which is very long, it's all about willing to take up the cross. So don't get sidetracked in text interpretation. Sometimes you already have a further, an advanced tone in it. This is just building the bridge to the next. You know, I also find that people who write either long letters or books or so, that they understand text interpretation a bit better than the others. because they know intuitively many of these points. You know, if you write a little article or write a letter about something, you do that too. You don't write everything up, everything mixed up. You have some kind of a line of reasoning what you want to write. Huh? And perhaps before you write, you say, now, what are the points really that I want to write? Perhaps you make on a little slip of paper just a few captions, a few words. We said, I must write about this, and this, and this. And perhaps you even put it into an order. That you say, I can't write about point five when that point five is really the beginning of something. You can't put it at the end. And you begin to order your subject. You say, where do I start? Huh? And what is must be the end? What must be the conclusion of it? You do all these things automatically, perhaps not so conscientiously, so orderly, but in a way, one does that way. One doesn't write, in a chaotic way. One always writes to lead thought so that the reader is led into... So in writing, one does the very same thing. That if one has written about point four, and you must come to the conclusion in point five, in point four, at the end of it says, so now what will be the conclusion of it? Or something like that, huh? Which already is the next point. So if one writes, one is much more familiar with how one writes. Huh? Here it's very, very clear, because, very natural, I would say, that she says, now, what is principle as principle? Principle as principle is to give proof, to test of my honesty of prayer, my sincerity and honesty of prayer. I must give the proof. That's honesty proved. Huh? Principle as principle. Can you see that? Now, if I want to prove my honesty, I jolly well have to express it in life, because that's the only proof where we find it. We don't find it just in principle alone, where we state the principle of proof, but by the actual doing of it. So the proof will be in life. And therefore she says yes, but simply asking that it may be done isn't enough. So principle as principle, by saying, well, there is proof of honesty. There must be proof of honesty, but where is the proof? And you say, well, the proof is in life. The proof is in what we call living it, huh? Or showing itself forth. So she can say at the end, well, there is a cross to be taken up before we can really enjoy this tone. So you will see the moment then, we come to the tone of life, that she gives then a whole series of how to take up the cross. Many, many incidents. That was just showing why, giving the hint that we must not be more papal than the Pope, huh? We say at home. Dogmatic about text interpretation, but that it is a flow, it's one link going into the other link, so that we can easily leave out that last sentence in order to define what that whole paragraph wants to say. Namely, it wants to say, really, in that whole paragraph, and we have it here, how is a principle-like attitude established? As principle, by furnishing proof of our unselfishness or of our honesty, furnishing the proof. What the proof will be, will then be shown in life. Yes. I don't think that I should start with the Tone of Life, because that's first of all a longer tone and a very beautiful tone. So I have just a few moments left which we can fill in with some kind of another hint. I have three questions here that people have asked me, and I think for 3 minutes I can answer one of these questions. The students have asked me about the difference between the presentation of the chapter on prayer as I have given it in 1956, and those tapes have been listened to by quite a few who are sitting here. And the question is, well, is now my presentation a repeat of it, or what is the relationship between those tapes and now these talks? I would say that what I say here is perhaps to 20-30% at most on those tapes in 1956. Because there I have just gone through the text and through the tones per se. What I did not do then so much is to show how I arrived at those conclusions. Whereas this time I have shown you how I arrived at those conclusions, and that they are not a subjective, personal, inspirational interpretation, but that is objective from the text, therefore impersonal and not subjective. Therefore, those two sets are different, they are complementary, I would say. That one does not replace the other. But the interesting point came up in that actually they said, well, then the order should have been just the other way around, that I should have to teach, I should have had to teach in 1956. I should have taught at that time really what I teach today, namely how I arrived at the conclusions. And having shown that, then afterwards we could just have the flow of it and the beauty of it and the inspiration of it and so on. Well, it happened that way. And when I thought, why did it happen that way, I couldn't give another answer than this one. I was very much mistaken by thinking that the students who were there, because they were all Dolly students, I thought they would know that. I was absolutely convinced that they would know that, because they had been studying the verbatim reports of John Dolly over years and years with his way of interpretation through the Bible. And I thought, this is natural. And apparently it isn't natural. And for a long time I was mistaken in that way. I didn't realize it. Actually, I only realized it now. So perhaps it was the right way to do it. First to show the great picture of it and just the impact that that whole textbook has a structure in it, and just give the vision of it, and that now we do the nitty-gritties, the detail work, and see why it is so. Okay, we go on this afternoon.